Sunday morning. Your patience is admirable. From time to time, versions of Keynesianism have come up, which are different from what Keynes and the original Keynesian had in mind, which of course is not a crime, but which also can be misleading or even wrong. Many of you would recollect Joan Robinson's criticism of what she called bastard Keynesianism. Now, I believe that in the more recent revival of Keynesianism, there is a strand which emerges, which I would call contingent Keynesianism. By that, I don't mean that there is a group of people necessarily pushing a coherent body of doctrines systematically, which is, in my view, contingent Keynesianism. But I think it's a position which gets reflected in the writings of lots of people, not necessarily systematically. Now, the main features of it, if I may just cull it out, is that, you see, it distinguishes between what one may call normal times and what one may call crisis times, with no necessary connection between the two. It's not as if crisis is caused by normal times or anything of that kind, but they are disjoint. They are disjoint phenomena. And it attributes crisis times to aberrations, that, you know, some mistakes were made, or, you know, insufficient regulation or systems failure and things of that kind. So crisis times are times to which economies or the world economy slips in because of mistakes that are made, but it has nothing organically to do with the fact of normal times. Thirdly, it defines crisis times essentially in terms of the economy falling into a liquidity trap, where standard monetary policy instruments cease to be effective at all. And fourthly, it believes that actually Keynesian policies are relevant for crisis times and not so relevant for normal times. Now, in this, one can, of course, distinguish between alternative strands. Especially if we are talking about Keynesian economic policies in terms of policies of fiscal stimulus, that is, you know, running a fiscal deficit, there is one view which I have seen articulated by no less a person than Krugman, who actually argues that, you see, in normal times, a fiscal deficit crowds out private investment. But not so in crisis times, because of the fact that, you know, you are in a liquidity trap. Now, the fact that fiscal deficit crowds out private investment is, as you know, was the Treasury view against which Richard Kahn had written that famous article. The Treasury view was essentially based on a mistake. I mean, it did not consider the fact that people, I mean, it assumed that the interest rate equated savings and investment. It did not even consider the fact that people made a set of stock decisions relating to the stock space as opposed to simply flow decisions. The moment you introduce stock decisions, then of course the Treasury view ceases to be relevant. Now, someone like Krugman, the way he sets up the argument is, of course, not to accept the fallacies of the Treasury view, but somewhat differently, which nonetheless I believe is not correct. He argues that, yes, short-term interest rate is fixed by monetary policy. The long-term interest rate depends upon the expected short-term rate into the future. If you have larger government borrowing, if you have a fiscal deficit, then even though the short-term interest rate may remain unchanged, the long-term interest rate rises because people expect the short rate to be higher in future because of the fact that there will be a larger level of activity. That pushes up the current long rate, and that therefore gives rise to a phenomenon of crowding out. Now, I think there are several problems with this argument, and firstly, it's not very clear if the current short rate rises, why people should expect the future short rate to be higher, especially if their expectation is that monetary policy would keep the short rate where it is. And secondly, even if that happened, that they believe because of larger level of activity, the expected short-term rates would rise, And even if it is the case that that would actually give rise to a higher current long-term rate, the fact is that with expected higher future activity, your marginal efficiency of capital schedule itself is likely to shift outwards, in which case there need not be any crowding out again. But if we leave aside that version of what I call contingent Keynesianism, nonetheless, we can take a milder version that would say that, all right, Keynesian policies, especially policies of fiscal stimulus, are relevant in the crisis times, but are not relevant in normal times. Not that actually the treasury view prevails, but that they're not relevant. You know, I mean, you don't need them in the normal times. Lastly, it also believes that therefore you can actually, since crisis times are an aberration, you can actually prevent this aberration from happening. You can regulate the economy, you can actually, you can have greater regulations on the financial sector, you can have better oversight, you can have better norms, all of which prevent the economy slipping into the crisis times. Now, I think this is a set of views which I call contingent Keynesianism, namely that Keynesianism is relevant only in the crisis times. This, of course, as an idea, goes back a long way. I think Schumpeter had said that Keynesian economics really depression economics, that Keynes makes sense in a depression, but on the other hand, when you are looking at normal times, there is not much sense that can be made of Keynes, or Keynesian policies are not that relevant, especially policies of fiscal stimulus. Now, I believe that this is something which is fundamentally, I consider to be a wrong position. Very simply, the reason is that, you know, Keynes, as you know, believed quite rightly that any boom is associated with speculative excitement as well. That, in fact, in the capitalist market, it is impossible to separate speculation from enterprise, that they actually come enmeshed with one another. If so, then for whatever reason, if there is an increase in the level of activity, that increase, however stimulated, maybe an innovation, that increase in the level of activity would be associated with also speculative excitement, which would necessarily take the form of speculation driving up asset prices and asset price inflation that then creates a bubble. John Hicks at one point used a term called the super multiplier, that basically an initial stimulus gives rise to a chain of subsequent kind of rounds of larger consumption and investment and so on, which is not the normal Keynesian multiplier, but he called it the super multiplier, that, you know, you have something exogenous and that gives rise to a super multiplier that need not even be convergent, that may actually over time take the economy, which then hits a ceiling, then it may come down. Now, I think the super multiplier would be greatly strengthened to the extent that you actually have asset price inflation, to the extent that you actually have bubbles in the economy, and consequently these bubbles drive up the growth process. These bubbles in fact add to the boom. But by the same reasoning, if for some reason there is a collapse in this economy, these bubbles then also give rise to a massive crisis. Keynes had said that one of the remarkable things, you know, when he was adapting his theory to explain business cycles, he says the real crucial thing about business cycles is the fact of the crisis, namely a sudden collapse. That sudden collapse he attributed to a collapse of the marginal efficiency of capital, but the point is that insofar as speculation is inseparable from enterprise, you have free asset markets. In free asset markets, any tendency towards a boom necessarily gets aggravated or, you know, added to by asset price inflation that gives rise to a further stream of expenditures, and that in turn therefore not only strengthens the boom but also, when the boom collapses, brings on a crisis. Now, it would follow from this that if you are actually, it would follow from this not only that the crisis is really linked to the womb itself. It's not a system failure, but it is in fact a part of the modus operandi of the system itself. And what is more, if you want to cut out the crisis, then you'd also, in some sense, in a laissez-faire capitalist economy, by which I mean an economy in which there's no specific fiscal stimuli, you would find that if you want to cut out the crisis, then you would have to truncate the boom itself. The fact that cutting out the crisis is worthwhile even by truncating the boom is an argument that was put forward by Dennis Robertson, and Keynes refers to it in the general theory. And Robertson's argument was that, look, full employment is an impractical objective. As a result, what we should do is to try and really cut down these fluctuations. And as a result, if we find, let us say, the level of unemployment falling below what it has been on average for the last decade or so, then the government or then the monetary authorities should actually raise the interest rate. And likewise, in the reverse case, they should do the opposite. In which case, you actually more or less try to stabilize the economy around a level of unemployment by cutting out crises as well as by cutting out booms. Now, Keynes was very critical of it. I mean, Dennis Robertson thought that the average level of employment that would prevail in this manner would be higher than what prevails through the business cycles. Keynes not only disagreed with it, but he also said that, you know, I mean, this is wrong because, what is the word, it recommends for acceptance something which is particularly undesirable about our current system. Okay, much that is undesirable about our current system. Why should the current system be stabilized at a level where you have such high levels of unemployment? Now, in lieu of this, Keynes himself suggested that when the boom begins, or when there's a tendency for the collapse of the boom, the interest rate should be lowered. Now, you may recollect, this is in fact something which Alan Greenspan did do. Whenever the boom tended to collapse, Keynes' recommendation is that you should lower the interest rate. But the problem, of course, is that even if you lower the interest rate, that may sustain the boom for a while. When that begins to collapse, you have to lower the interest rate further. So sooner or later, a situation would come where lowering the interest rate would not be adequate. And as a result, you'll have to sustain the boom, and I refer it to normal times, through fiscal stimuli. Now, the point that, therefore, if you are interested in maintaining the normal times, you can do so only by using the fiscal stimuli, or the fiscal stimulus that Keynes had talked about, is something which seems to me to be unavoidable. The idea that somehow we can sustain the normal times in an economy that is prone to speculation, I mean, not just prone to speculation, it's characterized by speculation, in which the boom is necessarily having a speculative element, and consequently the collapse of the boom would also be pretty sharp and catastrophic, and the longer the boom lasts, the greater would be the collapse. This would therefore suggest that contingent Keynesianism that actually separates normal times from crisis times is fundamentally not correct. From this, it would follow that the whole idea that if we regulated the financial sector, and fine, regulation is an excellent idea, of course it should be done, but that all that is required is a regulation of the financial sector, and if so, then we can prevent the economy slipping into crisis times, is itself really not correct, because if you regulated alone without introducing the fiscal stimulus, in that case, you may be preventing the crisis, but you'd also be preventing the boom as well. You would be doing pretty much what Dennis Robertson had suggested you should be doing. Therefore, the idea that somehow you can, with impunity, prevent crisis without having the state playing a role in terms of fiscal stimulus is an idea which is intrinsic to what I call contingent Keynesianism, and is an idea which, in my view, is not a correct idea. it follows then that whenever we are talking about getting out of the crisis, or if we are talking about a regime that prevents crisis, it will have to be a regime in which there is state intervention in the form of a fiscal stimulus. Now, I personally do not believe that the current crisis is entirely or solely a Keynesian crisis. I believe there are many other things underlying it. But the fact is that certainly a stimulus is what is required at this moment as a necessary condition, as a first step for getting out of the crisis. Now, this stimulus is something which immediately raises the question, by whom? Who is going to provide the stimulus? Now, obviously, yesterday, Terry Barker said, quite rightly in my view, that it will have to be a coordinated stimulus. An individual country, even the United States, providing a stimulus, much of whose impact would be leaking out of the United States to China and so on, would really give rise to protectionist tendencies, and the protectionist tendencies are likely to give rise to a shift from wages to profits and indeed even aggravate the crisis at the present moment. So it would follow then that the best way we should be thinking about it is through a coordinated stimulus. But the basic objection to a coordinated stimulus now, as indeed there was in the 1930s, you may know that in the 1930s itself, Keynes had wanted a coordinated stimulus. Some German trade unions had demanded a coordinated stimulus. There were large numbers of people who had actually wanted a coordinated stimulus, but the idea was scuttled. And it was scuttled essentially because of the fact that I believe finance capital does not want a proactive state in terms of a state that provides a coordinated fiscal, or a state that provides a fiscal stimulus, and a whole lot of states providing coordinated fiscal stimulus is something that would be anathema as far as international finance capital is concerned. Now, I think in that connection, to underplay the need for the coordinated fiscal stimulus, which is what contingent Keynesianism might do. I mean, I'm not saying it systematically does. I'm not saying there's any person who does it. But on the other hand, there is a tendency within it to actually accept that such a fiscal deficit can give rise to a treasury view type of conclusion crowding out private investment and so on. This might actually provide a theoretical alibi as far as the positions of international finance capital are concerned, which I think we should be guarding against. Thank you.